Okay, so I want to begin my talk with a quote, and my challenge to you is to guess who said it. Okay. There should be a deep belief in your own dignity, your own worth, and your own somebodiness. Don't allow anybody to make you feel that you are nobody. Always feel that you count. Always feel that you have worth, and always feel that your life has ultimate significance. Huh? Okay. Oh, Mr. Rogers. That's lovely. No, it's not Mr. Rogers. But it's another 20th century bodhisattva. That's your clue. I'll read it again. There should be a deep belief in your own dignity, your own worth, and your own somebodiness. Don't allow anybody to make you feel that you are nobody. Always feel that you count. Always feel that you have worth. And always feel that your life has ultimate significance. Oprah? Pema? Nelson? Kiku? It's Dr. Martin Luther King. I loved hearing all those bodhisattva names come out. And I love seeing this particular. I love that we have Dr. King on our altar. As a kind of a North Star for, you know, lighting the way for us here. So tonight I want to revisit a topic that we bring up here a lot, and that is the topic of metta for the self. So Dr. King said there should be a deep belief in your own dignity, your own worth, and your own somebodiness. And for a lot of people in our culture, this type of steadfast belief in our own value can be challenging. There are many different conditions that can cause this. Our sense of somebodiness can come from the reflection that we get from others rather than from within ourselves. This is a rampant and epidemic issue in our times for all generations. And the human mind's unfortunate habit of comparing our internal experience to what other people are presenting on the outside is heightened by social media. So for many of us, the self can be one of the hardest places for metta to initially take root. And for some of us, one of the beings in the difficult person category can be ourself. Thich Nhat Hanh said, "Everyone knows that peace has to begin with oneself, but not many people know how to do it." And because we don't know, we rely on whatever we learned or were able to figure out when we were younger. Sometimes the hypervigilance, am I good enough? Am I doing it right? And looking for that affirmation of kindness in someone else's eyes or words or behavior. Not knowing that we can actually provide that love from the inside as we are right now. No change needed. This is a quote from Buddhist teacher Sharon Salzberg. "The practice of metta, uncovering the force of love that can uproot fear, anger, and guilt." That can uproot fear, anger, and guilt, begins with befriending ourselves. The foundation of metta practice is to know how to be your own friend. According to the Buddha, you can search through the entire universe for someone who is more deserving of your love and affection than you are yourself, and that person is not to be found anywhere. You yourself, as much as anybody in the entire universe, deserve your love and affection. How few of us embrace ourselves in that way? With metta practice, we uncover the possibility of truly respecting ourselves. We discover, as Walt Whitman said, I am larger and better than I thought. I did not think I held so much goodness. Due to my own conditioning, this was the case for me. I did not think I held so much goodness. I attended my first 8-day metta retreat around 20 years ago. And I'd already been practicing mindfulness intensively for several years. But here on a metta retreat, much like this one, I found that there was a lot of reflexive aversion to offering the phrases to myself. The phrases towards myself felt unfamiliar and insincere. They didn't land. So I was given permission and I moved on to other beings. And I was very fortunate that I was able to, you know, feel the resonance when I was having a being other than myself and practice metta in that way. But when I came home from that retreat, I told my teacher at the time, Gil Fronsdal, about, you know, can't use myself as a being. Oh, well. And I was headed off to another 8-day retreat really soon after that. And Gil said to me, Eve, please, for the entire 16 hours a day, 8 days that you're on that retreat, use only yourself as your object. So I came back to my second metta retreat. And I was practicing with just self as object. And I would check in and see if there was any response from my heart. May I be safe? Nothing. May I be peaceful? May I be healthy? Nope. May I live with ease? Nothing. It's dry as a desert. Just nothing for days. It was really, actually really awful. It was a really, really difficult, dry, sad, hopeless practice. It's terrible. But I persevered, and perseverance is a beautiful quality, and I was fortunate that it showed up in my system, and I persevered. And then several days into the retreat, I was sitting here in this very hall, and it must have been a little bit earlier in the evening than it is now, or a different time of year, because I don't hear them now, but I heard the frogs out in the creek. And spontaneously out of my heart came this strong, warm, like you feel it physically, I know you know what I mean, this strong, warm energy pushing out from the heart area. And I recognized it as unconditional love for the frogs. And it was really pleasant. So I just allow myself to enjoy it, savor my love for the frogs. And because of having just been working for days on trying to connect with some loving kindness for self, I asked the question, how am I different from the frogs? What's happening here? Why is it that my system is able to like totally love the frogs, but there's this huge wall towards sending it in? And I realized that really, actually, there was no difference between me and the frogs. Just like the frogs, I'm mysterious. I'm fabulous. I'm created by nature. I'm imperfect. I'm impermanent. And I have my little moments of joy. Just like them, just the same. And when I realized that, then in that moment in the hall, I was able to just send myself wave after wave of authentic love. And that was my watershed moment, my frog insight. Loving kindness for self is not selfish and it is not narcissism. It's just caring for and accepting the being that is closest to us, which is ourself. Narcissism is a strategy of self-aggrandizing and bullying that some people develop when they don't feel love. Metta is actually giving the needed kindness and acceptance into our own system. Here's a reflection about sending this energy towards ourselves from the poet Galway Kinnell. He says, the bud, this is right, a stem and a bud here, in case you're wondering what I'm doing. The bud stands for all things, even those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within of self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on the brow of the flower and retell it in words and in touch. It is lovely. It is lovely until it flowers again from within of self-blessing. A really poignant piece of information that's come from research about self-compassion is that the subconscious human brain can't really tell the difference between a voice coming from the external world and a voice coming from within our own head. And you can see why that's poignant, because there's no social censure inside the head, right? Outside, we're a little more careful about what we say because somebody might have some kind of response, but inside, man, it's our own game. Well, if the game is one of self-criticism, that's a painful game. That impacts our nervous system. But the good news is that with metta practice, we can learn to reteach this poor thing that has learned the wrong things, in some cases, its loveliness, and then bring it into our whole system the way that I did that night with the frogs. As we habituate the metta phrases, we teach our own minds how to care for us. This is a poem by Daniel Mead. If you would grow to be your best self, be patient, not demanding, accepting, not condemning, nurturing, not withholding, self-marveling, not belittling, gently guiding, not pushing and punishing. For you are more sensitive than you know. Humankind is as tough as war, yet delicate as flowers. We can endure agonies, but we open fully only to warmth and light. And our need to grow is fragile as fragrance, dispersed by storms of will, to return only when the storms are still. So accept, respect, attend your sensitivity. A flower cannot be opened with a hammer. When we do this for ourselves, we instinctively do it for others. The Buddha said, one who truly cares for themselves could never harm another. I had that connection myself that same night that I was sitting in the hall hearing the frogs. After that sit, we went down to dinner. And I felt my whole sense of metta for everybody there deepen and broaden, like, instantaneously 100-fold. I had already learned how to be present for and care for others, but something opened up when I accepted myself as I am, flaws and all. It just took away the veil, and I could see that we're all, like I was describing myself, we all are part of nature. We're these beautiful miraculous, impermanent manifestations of the universe. And there's so much awe in just experiencing that. And awe and love are very interrelated feelings and energies. We're all imperfect. Part of metta is making peace with imperfection. We're all imperfect and we're all doing the best we can. There's a quote from John Ruskin that I like. He said, "The question is not what a person can scorn or disparage or find fault with, but what can they love and value and appreciate?" There is no genius in hate. Our confused minds don't see that there is no wisdom in hate. The confused mind likes to do it, but as Dr. King said, hating is a scourge and an illness. Discernment, boundaries, self-care, patience, compassionate action, perseverance. There are so many beautiful energies that we can tap into, that we can learn, that we can deepen in, that are skillful responses to life on life's terms. But hate isn't one of them. Hate is born of ignorance. Kindness is born of wisdom. This is something I'm saying to you now because there are these, you know, obscurations. In Buddhism, they're classically taught as hatred and greed and ignorance. When they take over the mind, they can speak in our own voice and sound like they know what they're talking about. It is really helpful to know that when we're taken by hate, we are not in the hands of wisdom. And when we have a movement towards kindness, however brief, that is a little call from the heart. This is the way home. This is the way to freedom. And to learn to follow that call. And what we're doing here is we're learning to follow and habituate, listening to that call and getting used to treading the path of kindness. The famed Buddhist nun Pema Chodron says, "What you do for yourself, any gesture of kindness, any gesture of gentleness, any gesture of honesty and clear seeing towards yourself will affect how you experience your world. In fact, it will transform how you experience the world. What you do for yourself, you're doing for others, and what you do for others, you're doing for yourself." Our metta practice is about deepening our capacity for authentic friendship with others, with our world, with the present moment, and with ourselves. After my second metta retreat, I came home and I began to work out what practices could help me continue my own journey of unconditional friendliness towards myself and help others who are on a similar journey. I saw that certain practices we find here on the Buddhist path are particularly helpful. There are a number of them, but tonight I want to mention, in addition to loving kindness, I want to mention mindfulness itself and intention. Both of these we've been bringing in a lot, and also patience. So beginning with mindfulness. Mindfulness is available anytime we remember. So right in this lived moment, which is always the only time we can practice it, let's feel our bodies. Feel our breath. And what are we doing here when we're just in this lived moment together, feeling our bodies and breath? We're bringing a non-judgmental attention to our direct experience. So that in itself is an act of befriending. When we are bringing our awareness to our experience, we are not abandoning it. We're here with ourselves. We're here with our experience. And furthermore, when we're here and we can perceive what's happening, we have a possibility of popping out of the automated conditioning that preceded us to this moment, popping out of it and maybe having a new response that's maybe kinder than whatever was habituated. And over hundreds and thousands of mindful moments where we meet it, and instead of going to the habituated criticism, we go to kindness. We eventually make our way into a habit of befriending ourselves. Mindfulness, by its nature, is a healing energy. But habits are hard to change. And so another practice that I've found to be crucial in the deepening in self-acceptance is the practice of intention. The Buddha said all things rest on the tip of intention, and modern neuroscience has shown that when we set an intention, the entire nervous system gets on the lookout to create that thing that we set the intention for. As I said earlier on in the retreat, intention is like a GPS. It kind of guides us where we want to go. When I was sitting retreat in Burma, the Sayadaw, the teacher, instructed us. We were sitting and walking, alternating 1 hour, 1 hour, 1 hour, from 4 a.m. to 11 p.m., and the Sayadaw instructed us before every sit and before every walk, first of all, invoke whatever you consider to be the beautiful qualities of the Buddha. And then with that in your mind, set your intention for that period of time. There's a lot of power in intention. I want to share this beautiful Rumi poem. It's called The Silkworm. I stood before a silkworm one day. And that night, my heart said to me, I can do things like that. I can spin skies. I can be woven into love that can bring warmth to people. I can be soft against a crying face. I can be wings that lift, and I can travel on my 1,000 feet through the earth, my sacks filled with the sacred. And I replied to my heart, dear, can you really do those things? And it just nodded yes in silence. So we began and will never cease. So we're in our little metta cars, and we have our little GPS of friendliness and kindness, and then we go along, and that brings me to the last quality that I want to talk about tonight that's really, really helpful. The Buddha said that the supreme virtue is patience. Don't ever give up. Just persevere. So we began, and we'll never cease. Joy Harjo, the poet laureate of the United States and a member of the Muscogee Nation, offered this teaching in her book of poetry titled Conflict Resolution for Holy Beings. Some of you may know this. It's the first poem in the collection. It's called For Calling the Spirit Back from Its Wandering the Earth in Its Human Feet. Put down that bag of potato chips, that white bread, that bottle of pop. Turn off that cell phone, computer, and remote control. Open the door and close it behind you. Take a breath offered by friendly winds. They travel the earth, gathering essences of plants to clean. Give it back with gratitude. If you sing, it will give your spirit lift to fly to the stars, ears, and back. Acknowledge this earth, who has cared for you since you were a dream, planting itself precisely within your parents' desire. Let your moccasin feet take you to the encampment of the guardians who have known you before time, who will be there after time. They sit before the fire that has been there without time. Let the earth stabilize your post-colonial insecure jitters. Be respectful of the small insects, birds, and animal people who accompany you. Ask their forgiveness for the harm we humans have brought down upon them. Don't worry. The heart knows the way, though there may be high-rises, interstates, checkpoints, armed soldiers, massacres, wars, and those who will despise you because they despise themselves. The journey might take you a few hours, a day, a year, a few years, 100, 1,000, or even more. Watch your mind. Without training, it might run away and leave your heart for the immense human feast set by the thieves of time. Do not hold regrets. When you find your way to the circle, to the fire kept burning by the keepers of your soul, you will be welcomed. You must clean yourself with cedar, sage, or other healing plant. Cut the ties you have to failure and shame. Let go the pain you are holding in your mind, your shoulders, your heart, all the way to your feet. Let go the pain of your ancestors to make way for those who are heading in our direction. Ask for forgiveness. Call upon the help of those who love you. These helpers take many forms: animal, element, bird, angel, saint, stone, or ancestor. Call your spirit back. It may be caught in corners and creases of shame, judgment, and human abuse. You must call in a way that your spirit will want to return. Speak to it as you would a beloved child. Welcome your spirit back from its wandering. It may return in pieces, in tatters. Gather them together. They will be happy to be found after being lost for so long. Your spirit will need to sleep a while after it has bathed and been given clean clothes. Now you can have a party. Invite everyone you know who loves and supports you. Keep room for those who have no place else to go. Make a giveaway and remember, keep the speeches short. Then you must do this. Help the next person find their way through the dark. So, in my explorations and my own deepening in this process, I wrote a song, and I want to sing it for you to close. It's called Simple Truth. The way I see it, there are two choices. I can wait for all these voices to tell me I have made it, or I can love myself the way I am. The way I see it, there are two choices. Try to do it their way, or find my own rejoicing music. Play. I've been given a responsibility to love myself like I would love a child. Chaotic, wild, and turning, building bridges, bridges burning. Just as I am. To love me. Maybe self-hatred protects me until the day no one rejects me. If I reject myself first, your coldness might not hurt as much. Maybe if I work harder, try more, do more, faster, longer, the day will come when I feel loved by everyone. I've been given a responsibility to love myself like I love trees. Okay, when branches crack and fall, no striving, no have-tos at all. The sparkling green that breathes me just as I am loves me. No, I do not have it all together. I never have, and I never will. And I know that you don't have it all together either. 'Cause nothing here was made that way. We're all falling, we're all flying, we're all playing, we're all dying. We've been given a responsibility to love ourselves like we love freedom. Using courage just to see the simple truth. Of you and me. Love looks like humble gratitude, like endless forgiveness. Just as we are, just as we are, just as we are, just as we are. Just as we are, just as we are. The way I see it, there are two choices. We can wait for all these voices to tell us we have made it, or we can love ourselves as we are. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Let's sit together for just a minute or two. Dr. King said, "I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality."
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.